Hi, you are listening to New Mexico in Focus, the podcast. I'm Laura Paskus, senior producer of Our Land, New Mexico's environmental past, present, and future, which airs on New Mexico PBS. Michelle Otero was the City of Albuquerque's poet laureate from 2018 through 2020. In 2021, her debut poetry collection was published by the University of New Mexico Press. It's called Bosque, and it's beautiful. This year, she released a new prose book. It's called Vessels, a Memoir of Borders. Recently, Michelle came into the studio here in Albuquerque, and we sat down to talk about her book and also about the challenges and rewards of writing about family, trauma, and history.
Hi, Michelle Otero. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Glad to be here. So you grew up in Deming.
Yes.
How did that landscape and that proximity to the border, how did that shape you and your writing and your attentiveness, which comes through so much in your writing?
I think that landscape, I really took it for granted when I was a kid, because it's just, that's how everything looked. So all the things with flowers can also poke you and hurt you. I just remember how hard my parents tried to grow grass, like for years, and they tried everything. They would do like sod or then manure and it really wasn't, I'm kind of glad we didn't have the internet then, because I didn't know. There was a lot I didn't know about this whole aesthetic of like, you have to have a lush lawn and these huge trees. It just wasn't what I grew up with. So I actually really appreciate being in spaces where you can see the sky, where things that are beautiful have protection around them, where you kind of know your place in the world. You know, when you grow up in that landscape, I think, and this one too, you realize like you're a teeny tiny part of it and not the center. And I think that shows up a lot in my writing. I don't know if I had a real concept of like the border, like the international border, because there was so much, they're in such close proximity to each other that Mexico almost didn't feel like another country. In really conscious ways, and then in profound ways, it totally did, right? So, you know, in Deming and that whole area, there's cotton, there's chili. Most of the people picking that are from Mexico. And so I just remember seeing like school buses with, I don't know if it's in this book or something else I wrote, of almost like a sad baseball team, like going out to these fields and picking. And I had an idea that was really hard, backbreaking work. And then also, because I didn't grow up speaking Spanish, there was a way that line, that border did feel like a divider. I thought, you know, maybe I'll learn Spanish. It'll be like my period. Like when I get my period, I'll gain the ability to speak Spanish. So in that sense, it was, you know, I was pressed right up against it, and then also very separate from it, just in terms of like language. And then also, as I've gotten older, I think the privileges, like the stark contrast between what it means to have U.S. citizenship and what it means to not have that, especially if you're from Mexico, has just become more and more pronounced as I've become more conscious too.
I was wondering if you could read a short passage on page 158. This is someone who's giving you some advice. Would you start with Alma said?
Alma said, "Your mind is like a river, and each trauma pollutes the river. When you retell the trauma, you take the junk out so the water can flow again. You turn full-color memories to black and white, so it's like a picture you're seeing instead of a movie you keep reliving."
Given the work that you do and the things that you think about and write about, how do we best process trauma on our bodies?
I think the writing process actually really parallels the healing process, where initially we just spit out, you know, whatever that process is, like as many words as we can, especially for writing. Well, I'm most familiar with creative nonfiction and poetry, but I think if you're doing any form of writing, that is about just getting the story out. And I think early in a therapeutic process, it might be like everything is so jumbled that it's just words and maybe they feel disconnected. And then there's the process of going back and making meaning of those things. So in the writing process, I have, you know, I don't know how many drafts of this book I went through. I said it took me 18 years to write so many, many, many words that actually aren't in this book. And I think that's true of like a healing process as well, where you go back and you layer on meaning, you shape things. And then eventually you incorporate that meaning back into the larger story of your life. So I think that there are ways to do that that are with somebody like Alma, who's the therapist in this book and was so helpful to me. It's not her real name, but where she really accompanied me on a specific process about like going back into traumatic memories and holding them up and giving me the ability to be in both like hemispheres of my brain at the same time. So that instead of either just reporting the facts and being totally detached from emotion or being so much in my emotion and having no like structure, through our work together, I was able to kind of integrate those memories in a way that is part of the larger story of my life and not the story. And I think that's also true of writing. So bell hooks talked about, may she rest in peace, how for many communities, sometimes the only access that they have to a therapeutic process is through writing. So I'm not a therapist, and I've also seen how healing the writing process can be for, you know, I've worked mostly with women, but I've also seen how it's been therapeutic for like young men and for groups of other groups that I've worked with, where just being able to get a story down and then to complete the process of having that story witnessed and held by a community, whether that community is like your immediate family or your close friends or like the larger city or state where you live, that for me really completes the whole process.
Along those lines, are there lessons for us when we're trying to heal the traumas on landscapes, and what part might storytelling play there?
I think for both the writing process and like individual healing and also landscape, it comes down to relationship. And so, you know, when I was poet laureate, my project was all along the bosque. And so once a month I'd invite a poet to pick a spot in the bosque that they liked and a poet whose work they wanted to celebrate. And it was all about kind of tricking people, either tricking people who love the bosque into loving poetry or tricking people who loved poetry into like loving the bosque. And I think, you know, when we think of land as an abstraction, where it's just like it's something just to be commodified or something out there that doesn't have much to do with me, then there's no imperative to protect it. But if I'm in relationship with land, much like I'm in relationship with my own story or in relationship with people I love, then the imperative to protect it becomes real. Or maybe it's not even so much protected. There are these places that need protection, but it's just about being in relationship with it. I don't have to alter it. I don't have to manipulate it. I see it. And if it's in need of like restoration or healing, like if a dam needs to come down, if a river needs to, you know, go back to its natural flows, if something like salt cedar needs to be removed, it's like, how am I supporting this thing that I love, this entity, this piece of land that I love in its fullest expression?
So you are so well known for your poetry, and I love your collection of poems about the bosque, but you just published a memoir, Vessels, a memoir of borders. I'd love to hear how the process of writing prose versus poetry is different or the same for you.
They almost feel like different dialects or accents. They almost feel like a form of code switching. So I speak differently here than I would if I'm than I would if I'm with my parents, or than I would speak if I'm with my friends in Oaxaca, or Or, you know, sometimes even in my neighborhood or when I have my mom voice. Or so, and it's funny because when I first came back to New Mexico in 2006, having written already, I think a lot of people thought of me as a poet, even though I don't know that up to that point I had ever written a poem on purpose. But I read a lot of poetry and appreciated poetry, and I think there was a way that it showed up in my prose. So I think of poetry as being, it just requires more discipline. There are more considerations, I guess I'll say. Like Valerie Martinez talks about how you just have to consider so much more because it's not just, you know, there's the line break, there's the, your unit of measurement is smaller, it's a syllable rather than a word or a sentence. There's how it looks on the page, there's like kind of stripping away and stripping away until, you know, it's more dense, I think, than prose. So now I kind of like that I'm able to go back and forth between the two, and I'm also writing some short stories, which is fun, because I think I'm a little tired of writing about myself. Like, I'm pretty funny, but, you know, there's a lot in this book that's hard to read. And it all ends well. Like, there's a happy ending. I'm happy. It's a memoir. You know that I turned out okay. And so I'm also just discovering a love for just being able to expand, like to stretch out and to write about things that aren't necessarily about my own life.
Yeah, so you are very funny, but there's a lot of really hard stuff in this memoir and hard things about people who are close to you. And I think a lot of writers, we want to keep things from our family, keep things even from like our closest loved ones, but we want to or need to write about them. And you did that in this book. And I would love to know how you were able to do that.
Yeah. I think there's a reason this book took me 18 years to write. And I think one of the considerations was about the people closest to me. And when you write a memoir, you can't really be like, no, that person, that's not you. And, you know, and I don't use people's like names or addresses or this particular person lives here. And there are hard things in the book. There's some of this book that came out in a chapbook, so a shorter collection called Malinche's Daughter in 2006. And when that came out, I so desperately needed to write the story and so wanted it to come out and didn't want to be told that I shouldn't or couldn't. And so I tried in very clumsy ways to talk to my family, and that didn't go well. And so finally it came out, and then it was just like this bomb went off. And so knowing that this book would pick up where that left off, like kind of incorporate it and have a longer arc, I, you know, for many years would leave this project. I, you know, wrote a whole poetry collection. I, you know, I did a lot of things in the interim, and then, but this book was always kind of there, you know, waking me up at night or nagging me or sometimes saying like, hey, remember me. I just got some really good coaching from a dear friend and colleague named Joe Weston, who does this practice called respectful confrontation. And he's like, okay, here's what you do. Just print out a draft, have a conversation with each member of your family, send them the draft, and then ask them to talk to you about it. Which felt very simple. It wasn't easy, but that's really what happened. I thought about like if I were on the other end, how would I want to engage with this material? What would I want to do? How would I want to be cared for and invited into the process? And then I tried to be really clear about what I wanted back. So not, you know, it's going to be hard for me to hear, can you take this out or can you change that? But if you can tell me your experience of reading it and the impact that it had on you, then we're functioning or we're communicating on a deeper level. I'm better able to receive it. And really that's what I did with each of my siblings, with my parents. And so I don't know that, Actually, I can't speak for everyone. I don't know that anyone is thrilled, like, yay, like Michelle wrote a book about really hard things. And it feels really good to just not be sitting on a pile of secrets, right? Or to be able to have a book release and have my mother there and to have the next generation of my family. So I had a nephew and his family attend and to think about inheritance and also what I'm passing on, and maybe if I can make the load a little lighter for the next generation, then that's, I mean, what a huge gift.
Yeah, thank you for talking about that. I love the whole idea of respectful confrontation and how we can do that. And your book release, which I attended in Albuquerque, was such a beautiful and joyous celebration. And it really was, you know, to see your family there and to see you lifted up for all that you do and all you've written was a beautiful thing to experience. Mm-hmm. So thank you for talking about that.
Thank you.
You know, as we're talking, this is a memoir rooted in your own experiences. You also create composite characters and you explore Aztec gods and goddesses as part of that. How does all of that help tell a more complete or a whole story?
So I think my doorway into to these figures in like Aztec or Mexica mythology was was through this figure of La Malinche, and she was the she became the interpreter for the Spaniards in the 1500s when they invaded what is now Mexico. And so at the time she spoke Nahuatl, and then she spoke another Mayan language and was able to she spoke Nahuatl and another Mayan language and was able to interpret between those two, but she learned Spanish and then just became the direct interpreter. So I think she gets a really bad rap because a lot of people look at her as a traitor. Here's an indigenous woman who helped the Spaniards. Symbolically, she's also the mother of mestizaje, so the mother of this group of people of which I'm a part, who are a mix of Spanish and indigenous ancestry. So I feel a real, I don't know if we're blood related, I think I write that in the introduction, that, but I feel a real, just a real connection to her. And then I started looking back when I started writing this book, and then before it, when I started writing Malinche's Daughter, I kept wanting to go back in time to find a time when women weren't harmed. And I thought, well, maybe it's in Aztec mythology, maybe it's in some of these other things, and then found this story of Coyolxauhqui, the moon goddess, and I thought, oh, that a moon goddess, that's so beautiful, and then her story is so violent, and, you know, her brother, the god of war, decapitates her and throws her head into the sky, and that's how she becomes the moon, and so I think the link back to that was thinking about this idea of brokenness, and even if that's our inheritance, like what's our work in this life? And so Gloria Anzaldúa, fortunately, wrote this really amazing piece about the Coyolxauhqui imperative and how our job in this life is to, you know, even if we come in broken or we're broken along the way, our work is to put ourselves back together. And so that really, again, much like with Malinche, I just really felt a connection to Coyolxauhqui and that idea of that brokenness doesn't have to be a life sentence, that there is a way to like remember, and it's in writing our memories that we like put ourselves back together.
Thank you, Michelle. Thanks for talking with me, and thank you for all the work and the writing that you do.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. You can find Our Land all over the place on the PBS app, YouTube, and Instagram. Just search up Our Land, New Mexico.